Who remembers something from yesterday's class? This is the teacher's test to see if he did his part and see if anyone remembers anything. Yes?
How's time is Krishna's power? Is the
Kalosmin Loka Kaya Krit moves everything, and ultimately time destroys everything in the material world. Yes. If someone has some piety, old age, the fear that naturally comes from old age drives one for the shelter of Krishna. Thank you. A high fever at the time of death. Yes, Hari. Quite an astounding concept that a devotee is not so much affected by old age. Why is that? Yes. In other words, a devotee, and this is a devotee actually, he's achieved some shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. And this was the teachings of Sanat Kumar at Vajavasudevam, that one has to worship. Maybe we can turn that one down. That one's the noisy one, I think. That one needs the shelter of the boat of the lotus feet of Krishna to cross the insurmountable ocean of the material energy. And then, padam padam yad vipadam natesham. That ocean shrinks down to the size of a calf's hoofprint. Very, very small. So practically speaking, there's no need or no anxiety to cross over the water of a calf's footprint. So similarly, if one actually attains the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, then there is no anxiety of crossing beyond the material energy. And there is no anxiety at death because one is holding on to something so tangible. So how to get that tangible shelter is the essence of the Bhagavatam's teachings. And as Sanat Kumar explained previously, that to get that combined with developing attachment to Krishna, one has to develop a detachment from what? Yes, the bodily, specifically the bodily concept of life. Because as long as we are enwrapped in thinking this is me, the body is me, these different parts are me, we will naturally be engaged in material consciousness, in acquiring things for me. So that has to be given up. And to help us give up our attachment and our, we can say, obsession with the bodily concept of life as this being me, Narada Muni is very kindly speaking to Prachini Barishat and showing very clearly that despite the romance, the fond thoughts of a future, in the future, then there will be some happiness. Only if I do this, then I'll gain some happiness in the material world that will come to me. But the happiness never becomes delivered, in fact. It is the promise. It is the anticipation. But dukhalayam ashashvatam anitya sukaloka. It is ultimately crushed by everything in the material world, as you said?
Time.
By time. So now we are near the end of the romantic story between Paranjana and his beautiful queen, Paranjani. Old age has struck him gradually, day by day by day, night by night by night, as he was enwrapped in enjoying his body and those things produced of his body, his life was gradually shortened, Each day shortened his life by that day. And he had forgotten about any purpose, true purpose in life. And he had gained no shelter. And then, amazingly, like this practically speaking, old age hits one. One time, when Prabhupada was very ill in his last days, he was traveling with one of his sannyasi disciples and Prabhupada perceived that he looked at him, because Prabhupada was very, very gaunt, very thin and ill. And one of his disciples looked at him in a way that Prabhupada could understand his mind. And Prabhupada said, "Don't think this isn't going to happen to you. Because that is something that we can be assured of if we are lucky enough to live to an old age, that the body will deteriorate. Regardless of how strong and eternal we feel now, the body must deteriorate and life passes so quickly. And if we are engaged in material pursuits, those material endeavors will steal away the most valuable thing we have. Tarappa dhruva martidam. That by which we can gain the most wonderful thing. So therefore, to detach us from the romance of the bodily concept of life, that I will be able to perceive something, I will be able to achieve something that is going to bring me happiness, the family, the friends, the wealth, the fame, the strength, the knowledge on the material level. All these things are what materialistic people strive for, but they are based on the bodily concept of life, and they will all be crushed into fine powder and dissipated. So in this chapter, age has hit Paranjana. This is the first text. The great sage Narada continued, "My dear King Prachini Barishat, afterwards, the king of the Yavanas, whose name is fear itself, Bhaya, as well as Prajara, Kalakanya." Prajara is the fever accompanying death, and Kalakanya is Jara, old age, the daughter of time. These things together attacked with his soldiers. They began to travel all over the world. Here is Prabhupada's purport. Very strong, very pointed. The period of life just prior to death is certainly very dangerous, because usually at this time people are attacked by the weakness of old age as well as many kinds of diseases, because the prana, the life force, has lost its ability to defend the body. And one could be just walking down some stairs or something and have a simple fall down, and immediately one's hip is broken or one's arm is broken. The body, the bones become so brittle, very dangerous. It's so common that an old person, an elderly person, will be in the shower and by mistake leave some soap and slip and break something. So dangerous. When we're young, I know that she used to be a young girl, but when she was 16 years old in the farm in Australia, she used to have a horse. And all day long, she loved to ride her horse. And she would get knocked off the horse, and she would just get up and get back on the horse and ride again and fall off and get back and fall off. And then when I met her, she was 21 years old, and she couldn't practically walk anymore. The abuse that we cause our body, we don't notice it, and I have my own personal experiences of this. You don't notice these things when you're young. But by the time you get old or older, every problem you've caused your body by overindulgence by improper living, it will attack you as some form of debilitating pain. When you're young, you think you escaped. Oh, I fell off the horse, I banged my body, my backside, my knee, my back, my shoulder. But never mind, because in youth there is a feeling of invulnerability. The body is so strong, the prana, the life force is so strong. But in old age, none of this exists. Even walking feels dangerous. There's a little water on the ground, very dangerous, frightening. So, and then the internal diseases start attacking. Very, very frightening, very dangerous. Prabhupada continues saying the diseases that attack the body are compared here to soldiers. These are the soldiers of Yavanaraj attacking. And don't think that this isn't going to happen to you. There are quite a few of us in this room can attest to it. It is going to happen. I never thought it was going to happen to me. But it is going to happen. So remember, this is one of the last of these very heavy classes. But it's so important, because as long as we keep a hope in the bodily concept for our happiness, that will so much get in the way, either in a gross way or a subtle way. Labha puja pratishtari yata upasakagan. In a gross way or a subtle way, if we try to get something out of the material world that's selfish, then this is the essence of material existence that covers us, the false ego. So we have to come to the conclusion that Krishna has come to, dukkhalayama shashvatama nitya sukhaloka, mam padibha, just for mam, that we should give up this hope and take shelter of Krishna with great devotion. We cannot hold two things in the hand at the same time. Doesn't work. We have to put this down to pick up this. We cannot pick up devotion to Krishna full-heartedly with surrender if we are attached on the material level. Therefore, Narada Muni is kindly preaching in this very heavy and strong way to Puchini Bharisa and to by Prabhupada's mercy, preaching to us. So Prabhupada continues, the diseases that attack the body are compared here to soldiers. These soldiers are not ordinary soldiers, for they are guided by the king of the Yavanas, who acts as their commander-in-chief. The word Dishta Karina indicates that he is their commander. When a man is young, he does not care for old age. It's unavoidable for a young person. It's practically inconceivable that he is going to become old. He cannot conceive of it. But he does not care for old age, but enjoys sex to the best of his satisfaction, not knowing that at the end of life, his sexual indulgence will bring on various diseases, which so much disturb the body that one will pray for immediate death. The more one enjoys sex during youth, the more he suffers in old age. A very pointed lesson from Srila Prabhupada on this point. If one tries to enjoy the material world, it simply means suffering later on. Second text. Once, now the battle is becoming more pointed. Once the dangerous soldiers attacked the city of Paranjan with great force. Although the city was full of paraphernalia for sense gratification, it was being protected by the old serpent. And this, I've also personally seen this. By the time you're 50, You've worked so hard your life, your whole life. You're feeling tired, and maybe you've gathered enough things around you to make your life a little comfortable. So you have your paraphernalia for sense gratification, and you don't feel like struggling so much anymore. Your life energy is being reduced. You have your comfortable chair, you have your this, you have your stereo set, you have your this, whatever. You have your room arranged just the way you want, finally. And that is the time, according to the Vedic institutions, that a man must leave. Just when you have it organized for your comfort, you have to leave. Why? Because, and in fact in the first canto, Prabhupada says one should leave that. A man should leave that before old age seriously sets in. Because at that point, at 50, you still have some independence left. You can still move. You can still walk around. Later on, you will become dependent. Completely dependent on people who do not think that the center of their life is to please you. And it is such a, not only embarrassing, such an insult. And Prabhupada will speak about this later. So the man's spirit will be crushed, insulted. He's worked so hard, and then at the end, his body is broken, his spirit is crushed. And unless he is extremely advanced, he will not be able to use these difficult circumstances to push him towards Krishna. He will become broken in heart. And his life energy is finished. So he has no energy to start something new. Prabhupada's purport here. As one's body engages in sense gratification, it becomes weaker and weaker daily. Finally, the vital force becomes so weak that it is herein compared to a weak serpent. The life air has already been compared to the serpent. When the vital force within the body becomes weak, the body itself also becomes weak. At such a time, the death symptoms, that is, the dangerous soldiers of death superintendent Yamaraj, they begin to attack very severely. Cough, cold, one after the other. You're sick in this way, you're sick in that way. Your liver hurts, your teeth are all loose. Your eyes are weak. Your ears are clogged, your knees hurt. On and on and on. And according to the Vedic system, before coming to such a stage, one should leave home and take sannyas to preach the message of God for the duration of one's life. And what is that essence of that taking sannyas for preaching? It is paratmanishtam, to develop the practice of full dependence on Krishna and not depend on the externals, on these externals that are no shelter. We develop a dependence on those, and the preaching of sannyas is especially meant to develop a dependence on Krishna and making Krishna one's only shelter, one's only shelter. Prabhupada continues, however, if one sits at home and is served by his beloved wife and children, he certainly becomes weaker and weaker due to sense gratification. And when death finally comes, one leaves the body devoid of spiritual essence. So we spoke yesterday of what people nowadays do during their final years, and they become frivolous like children. Very dangerous, very, very dangerous. Gradually, Kalakanya, this is text 3, with the help of dangerous soldiers, attacked all the inhabitants of Paranjana city and thus rendered them useless for all purposes. When Kalakanya, the daughter of time, attacked the body, The dangerous soldiers of the king of the Yavaners entered the city through different gates. Each of the gates of the body of the city, or the city of the body, become weak and injured and diseased. And in this way, so many of the soldiers of the Yavana, which is all the different diseases, enter through each of the different gates of the body and cause so much trouble. They began to give severe trouble to all the citizens. Pain occurs at each of the gates of the body. This is what old age, nearing death, is like. And again, don't think it's not going to happen to you. When the city was thus endangered by the soldiers of Kalakanya, King Paranjana, being overly absorbed in affection for his family, was placed in difficulty by the attack of Yavanaraj in Kalakanya. Purport. When we refer to the body, we include the external gross body with its various limbs, as well as the mind, intelligence, and ego. In old age, these all become weak when they are attacked by different diseases. The proprietor of the body, the living soul, becomes very sad at not being able to use the field of activities properly. And what does he start doing when he starts looking at all the young people? When he is old and wrinkled and his knees hurt and no one likes him anymore and he gets wheeled out in a wheelchair to the park and he sees all the young people playing and dancing and the boys and the girls, what thoughts enter his mind? Huh?
Only I could
do that again. I remember when I used to be able to run and I could jump. I could play basketball much better than him before. Only if I could do that again. Only if. And by placing these desires in one's heart, adishtaya manaschayam visha, one is preparing for one's next body. Only if I could play the violin. I always wanted to be able to play the violin. I always wanted to be able to what? Everyone should think, what desires do we keep in our mind like this? Only if. I wish I could have that. I wish I could have done that. And really, there should only be one lamentation in the heart. Radha Krishna Nabhajiya, Manusha Janama Paya, I was not able to worship Radha and Krishna with devotion. Oh, how I've wasted my life. Oh, I need so much mercy now. Calling out very sincerely to Krishna. That is the only legitimate lamentation for a soul. So, King Paranjana was embraced by Kalakanya. He gradually lost all his beauty. Having been too much addicted to sex, he became very poor in intelligence, and he lost all his opulence. Being bereft of all his possessions, what do we value when we are in difficulty? What do we take shelter of in this world? We have our clever intelligence that served us well. We can be placed anywhere. We can use our intelligence to get out of the difficulty we're in. We sometimes use the charms of our beauty or our skill in so many different things. Sometimes we get out of difficulties by our relationships, our fame, by our knowledge. But each and every one of those things, they are not ours, in fact, because we will lose them. We will lose our beauty. We will lose our fame. Just like there was one person we saw that was on a car. You know, they have the government officials in India. They have their ambassadors with the light on top. And then they, and if it's a government official, he has MP, Member of Parliament, on there. So we saw one that said former MLP, former Member of Parliament. Not even anymore, but trying to squeeze some special privilege from something he had previously. But he's lost it already. And all these opulences that we take shelter of in our youth and as we get older, they are not actually ours. We will lose each and every one of them. They will prove to be unreliable to us. They will not be able to help us. So he was bereft of all his possessions. Everything that he thought was his money, his strength, his independent spirit, all of them, one by one by one, were taken away. All his possessions, all the things that he thought he identified, all the skills he had that have always had served him his life, his whole life, every single one of them, all his possessions, he lost them. And he was conquered forcibly by the Gandharvas and the Yavanas, day by day by day. Prabhupada's very short but heavy purport. When a person is attacked by the invalidity of old age and it is still addicted to sense gratification, he gradually loses all his personal beauty, intelligence, and good possessions. He thus cannot resist the forceful attack of the daughter of time. 7. King Paranjana then saw that everything in his town was scattered. The town, the city in which he was living, is the body. And that his sons, his grandsons, his servants, and his ministers were all gradually opposing him. He also noted that his wife was becoming cold and indifferent. Prabhupada's purport. And I've seen this, that the children, when they grow up, when they were young and you were very big and they were very little, they were very reverential. But especially in the West, when they become older, they like to show their ability not to listen to their parents, and they can even mock their parents, make fun of their parents. And for an old man, each one of those type of things is like a dagger in the heart. But he's trapped at home. He's old. He's invalid. He cannot do anything about it. One insult. The next insult. He cannot even pass properly. He cannot use the toilet properly. He cannot bathe by himself. He cannot even shave. A man can't. All the things that a man will take for granted. And as the source of his strength and pride and false ego, gradually just crushed. Such an embarrassment, a humiliation. But it gets worse only. Purport. When one becomes an invalid, his senses and organs are weakened. In other words, they are no longer under one's control. The senses and sense objects then begin to oppose him. When a person is in a distressed condition, even his family members, his sons, grandsons, and wife become disrespectful. They no longer are under the command of the master of the house. Just as we wish to use our senses for sense gratification, the senses also require strength from the body in reciprocation. A man keeps his family for enjoyment, and similarly, family members demand enjoyment from the head of the family. When they do not receive sufficient money from him, they grow disinterested and ignore his commands or desires. So therefore, remember, who is this being spoken to? It's Narada to Prachini Barishat. But in the story around that story, who is speaking and who is hearing? Maitreya Muni is speaking to who? So when Vidura is hearing this, and he's heard that Dhruva Maharaj left home at the end of his life, and here what is happening to Paranjan, and then Prachini Barishat, when he hears this story, he leaves home. He doesn't even wait for the Prachetas, who he sent out to perform austerities, his sons, to come back. He just leaves. So Vidura is thinking, oh, my brother, Dhritarashtra, he's an old man, and this is his position. He's been humiliated. Each one of his sons has been killed by the Pandavas. By Bhima, exactly. So he thinks, I will rescue Dhritarashtra. And then as soon as this, at the end of the fourth canto, he goes back to what we heard in the first canto, the 13th chapter, where Vidura enters the city of Hastinapur and preaches so heavily. He preaches even heavier than Narada Muni did. He tells Dhritarashtra, you are living here like a dog in the house of your enemies, the Pandavas, and you are eating scraps of food tossed to you by Bhima, like you're the household pet dog. You're being insulted in this way. He cuts. Why? To break this insane attachment to our thinking, if I remain at home comfortable, that I'm safe and that I'm actually comfortable. This is illusion. This is Maya. So he says, get out. Get out now while you can. Because something is coming that is very terrible. And if you don't get out now, you will be crushed by that terrible thing. And what is that terrible crushing force that is coming? It is Kali Yuga. Manda sumanda mateo manda abhagya upadrutaha. And Kali Yuga, the prime symptom is this upadrutaha. And what does that mean? The minds, everyone's mind is disturbed. And the physical diseases are powerful in Kali Yuga, but the mental diseases, they destroy everyone. And when the mind is really disturbed and full of anxiety, the body cannot be healthy. What to speak of concentrating when we chant Hare Krishna on our beads or something like that, with the mind always jumping here and there, passion, ignorance, disturbed. So difficult. So Vidura pulls Dhritarashtra out before Kali Yuga begins. But here we are with Kali Yuga raging already. So we need some special mercy. And we heard about that yesterday. What was that special mercy? Does anyone remember? The gift of the holy name by Mahaprabhu. Did you think about that? Did anyone think about it? Because there's such a tendency. As soon as you leave the room, what about the gift of the holy name? What does that mean? What does that mean? And what does it mean to take shelter? Oops, take advantage of it. It means to take shelter. Namasraya kore jatana tumi. Namasraya. So much depends on the mood that we chant. I'm seeing this, I'm reading this in my readings, whatever I read, I come across this point again and again. And hearing, lately I've been listening to Chaitanya Bhagavat. And when Mahaprabhu was just starting the Sankirtan movement, and he is the acharya, the teacher of the chanting and of the holy names. And he is the example. Of course, we can't imitate. But he's chanting with such devotion, calling out, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? But if we have this bodily attachment, where is the question of calling out Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is the question of doing that? Because our shelter is not... We have a shelter, a false shelter in the material world, our comfort. But if we can understand that that's not a shelter at all, and understand that the holy names are our shelter, then we can chant properly. Then, when we're in difficulty, those difficulties become our greatest friend, because they push us to our shelter. It means that we've wandered from our shelter. We take shelter of our mind. We take shelter of the happiness, the frivolous happinesses, the material happinesses that the mind offers. And we take shelter of the frivolous material distresses that the mind offers. Oh, today I'm in a bad mood. Oh, today someone said, oh, I did something very nice. I take shelter of the happiness of that. Or I take shelter of the misery of my failures, and I couldn't do this right, and someone chastised me. But no! Neither the good nor the bad have anything to do with us. The mind. This is just the mind. Rather, we have to really, 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 not have to in the sense of we don't have a choice, but we should really learn the art of Suki Duki Bolo Nako Vadane Harinam Korore. We should just chant Hare Krishna, whether we're happy, unhappy. We should take shelter of Krishna. It's the best practice in life, and it's the best practice for death. When King Paranjana saw that all his family members, relatives, followers, servants, secretaries, and everyone else had turned against him, we rely on all these people. We consider them our sajana, our own. We think they have loyalty to us. This is especially for materialists, because materialists only have loyalty to manaratena sato dhavato bahi, their mind, and where it jumps to, where it thinks its material shelter and self-interest is. So when he saw that his shelters, his previous shelters, were neglecting him, he became very anxious. This is nearing death. Everything that you rely on the bodily level, turns to be a traitor. It doesn't prove reliable. It turns against us. But Paranjana could not counteract the situation, because he was thoroughly overwhelmed by Kalakanya. And then fear, anxiety, fear, lamentation. The objects of enjoyment became stale by the influence of Kalakanya. Who is Kalakanya? I couldn't hear one person distinctly. The daughter of time, which is Jara, old age. He had been embraced by old age. What a metaphor. Due to the continuance of his lusty desires, King Paranjana became poor in everything. So we take shelter fulfilling our material desires, pushing from our mind the thought of what's actually happening to us at this very moment. Thus he did not understand the aim of life. He was still very affectionate towards his wife and children. And he worried about maintaining them. So this is very typical, because in family life, the children are attached to the parents and the parents are attached to the children. The wife is attached to the husband's attached to the wife. But of these two relationships, we can divide the relationships into dependent, the one who is dependent on another, and the superior, who is the protector. Who is the one who is more attached? It is the protector. The one who is the giver of shelter, because that position is more imitative of being Krishna, actually, who is the actual protector. The person who is the protector is so attached to the ones he's protecting. And therefore, when he's dying and he doesn't know where he's going to go. He may become a dog or a cat or a monkey or a flea. But he's wondering, and worrying, my children, who's going to take care of them after I'm gone? How are they going to maintain themselves? How about this? And how without me, how will they keep on going without my good advice? He's worrying about that at the time of death. In great anxiety, he's dying and he doesn't know where he's going. There's a little story that Prabhupada told of a very wealthy man who lived in a house. And big house. And then he died. And he came back in his next birth as a cobbler, a muchi. And that cobbler, came to the door of his own house. And he knocked on the door, and in his previous life, his sons were there, and they didn't want to see this dirty cobbler, so they took off their shoes and they were beating him. And they were his children in his next life. He had built the house that they were living in. And in Japan one time, there was a man in Kobe. He had a house, and Prabhupada wanted an apartment in that house for the temple, and the man wouldn't give it. And Prabhupada became upset. He said, he's so attached to that house. In his next life, he will become a mouse in that house. And he's worrying about his children, and his children are going to set a trap. And he's going to try and eat the cheese in the trap, and his neck will be broken. And he's worrying about his children. In Australia also, he said, there was a tree in Melbourne. There was a temple the devotee had. And Prabhupada said, this tree that is so close to the house, he was the owner of the house in his previous life. So much attachment. And we don't know where we're going. So that is foolish. That is the definition of sentimental. Sentiment is good. Rasa means sentiment. But sentimental means when one overly gives sentiment to a non-deserving place, where it's overly given to a place that doesn't require so much sentiment. So there's naturally some sentiment with family, but if we become sentimental, it is very dangerous, extremely dangerous. So the bad news for Paranjana continues. The city of King Paranjana was overcome by the Gandharvas and Yavana soldiers. And although the king had no desire to leave the city, he did not want to leave his body. He was circumstantially forced to do so, for it was smashed by Kalakanya. No one wishes to die. No one wishes to leave their body. But we will be forced, each and every one of us in our own day will be forced to leave the body. Forced. And the question is, what will our mentality be like at that time? Where will our shelter be? Will we have sufficiently done sadhana? Will we be strong enough? Because this isn't a fun time. We can laugh at foolish Paranjana. But the time of death is compared to, the pain of the time of death is compared to the sting of 1,000 scorpions. Have you ever been stung by a bee? or something like that? Anyone ever been bitten by a rattlesnake or something like that? No, but so incredibly painful. But 1,000 scorpions, one scorpion bite is enough to kill you if it's a powerful scorpion. And at the same time, you can't breathe. And your heart stops pumping blood to the body. You can't breathe. Your mind is disturbed. Everything you've depended upon, your whole life that we take for granted, the breathing, the heartbeats, the clear-mindedness, everything is in pain. And is it going to be easy to say, oh, now I think I should chant Hare Krishna? Yes, it seems like I might be dying right now. I think it might be a good idea if I just take shelter of Krishna's names in a very serious way. No. Whatever we are obsessively attached to, whether it's where we think our shelter is, our mind will go there and hold on so tightly. Like Ajamil, as we'll hear in the sixth canto, he called out the name of his son because of his attachment to his son. It didn't go through his intelligence, oh, I think my son is my shelter and I should call out the name of my son because I like my son. No! Wherever the attachments lie, the mind will hold on to that so tightly. So therefore, it is really in our best interest if we develop very deep attachment to Krishna and practice in our life. The difficulties that hit us quite regularly, they have to come. One way to the materialistic person, he's trying continuously to push away difficulties and make a very happy, pleasant situation. But the devotees, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings like this, the devotee, he sees that the difficulties that come as he's performing devotional service as his happiness. And here is one of the reasons. Because as difficulties come to us, and they must come to us, because the material world is arranged that they come to us. Difficulties come to us, and we should look at our minds and see where our minds go for shelter. We should assess our lives and see how much Krishna is actually becoming our shelter. This is what Prabhupada wishes to teach us. This is what Sri Narada Muni wishes to teach us. This is what Sukadeva Goswami, Sutta Goswami, Maitreya Muni, and all the commentators on the, they want to teach us to develop this kind of a quality attachment to Krishna. Krishna as our only shelter. Even the residents of Vrindavan, or especially the residents of Vrindavan, they knew nothing but Krishna is their shelter. When there was a forest fire, they just called out Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. When they were happy, they called out Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. They talked about Krishna. When they were sad, they thought about Krishna. And therefore, practically speaking, of course, they weren't in the material world. So, jivatiyo mukti pade sadayabak. For a person who makes Krishna his full shelter, they will not be in the material world. So when difficulties come, we should watch our mind and see where it goes. And see if we need to learn to push it in a slightly different direction or not. Because this is the most difficult of all times. So we can laugh at foolish Paranjana, so attached to this and so attached to that. But we are Paranjana. More foolish. Shunya janiya shunya visha kainu. And still, we're so attached to the body, reluctant to give it up, as Prabhupada's explaining in the purport. So under the circumstance, in spite of this, it's not that the material energy becomes compassionate. Oh, he's having such a difficult time, we should be easy on him right now. No. Under the circumstances, the elder brother of Yavanaraj, known as Pravraj, sets fire to the city to please his younger brother, whose other name is Fear Itself. And what was the Bengali proverb we were talking about that other day? Bhajan kore, sadan kore, mrityu, janle hoy. That this is the test of one's bhajan, one's sadhan. What will we be attached to? Where will our shelter be at the time of death? I can speak. I may be able to convince people, oh, I'm such a nice devotee or something like that. But those aren't the tests. Mrityu jan lohoy. What? Where my shelter actually is, that is my test. That is the test. There is no bluffing. But there is one thing. But I don't know if I should talk about that when I'm trying to terrify everyone so much. The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Vaishnavas and Prabhupada are very, very, very kind. And if we make our feeble, humble attempt in service, then even though our lack may be very great, it's not that Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will be sitting there with a scorecard and saying, you did this wrong, and you did this wrong, and okay, you did this, okay, you did that service, but that day you missed that. No, 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 no. There is mercy. There is mercy. And I think we should, in considering, when we judge others, we should really consider this point. Do we want judgment, or do we want mercy? And I think when it comes to ourselves, at least for myself, I know that if there is a judgment, I'm due for a lot of trouble. So mercy, mercy. There is mercy. There is so much mercy. I once had an experience that it was so many years ago. I can't experience it directly now. But I remember when I was in Hong Kong in 1971. I drank some dal that was bad, and I became ill, and I fainted, and it was such a peculiar experience because it was very slow and gradual, and there was no pain though, but my consciousness was gradually leaving my body. And I was watching it happen. Hey, this is interesting. My consciousness is leaving my body. I was fainting. And one by one, everything I was surrounding me just left. But I found that Prabhupada actually didn't leave. I hope he somehow or another will still be as merciful to me now and later as... because then I was very innocent, but now I'm less innocent. But the great Vaishnavas, where we find our spiritual shelter, they will not leave us. Mahaprabhu will not leave us. So in our life, we should try to do some sincere service. That's all. Service. One time one devotee wrote a poem for Prabhupada, and he ended each line of the poem. It was to Krishna, and he said, "Oh Krishna," and each line was, "Let me become your devotee," something. And then Prabhupada replied, and each stanza of the poem ended, "Oh, let me become your devotee." And Prabhupada said, "Very nice poem, but you shouldn't end it, 'Let me become your devotee.' You should end it, 'Let me become your servant.'" Very, very simple to understand. We just want to become servants of the servants, servants of Krishna. Gopi Bharata Parakamalayo Dasa Dasana Dasa. Service, service to the devotees. Become a servant. This is the hardest thing for the conditioned soul to accept. And not only a servant, an insignificant servant. That makes it almost impossible to deal with. Krishna has billions and billions, countless billions of servants. And all we can become is an insignificant servant. But yet, we all have our individuality and our own little thing that we can offer to Krishna through the servants of the servants. Very easy to talk about these things. Easy to talk about Paranjana's death. Easy to talk about being a servant of the servant of the servant. But this is the root of our material existence. This ahankar, false ego, false sense of mastership. So, the limbs of the serpent's body were slackened by the Gandharvas and Yavanas soldiers. His prana, his strength, beaten day after day by the days and nights, by old age's gradual approach. The serpent was thoroughly defeated in his bodily strength. And when he attempted to leave the body, he was checked by his enemies, and being baffled in his attempt, he began to cry loudly. King Paranjana then began to think of his daughters, sons, grandsons, daughters-in-laws, servants and other associates, as well as his house, his household paraphernalia, and his little accumulation of wealth. King Paranjana was overly attached to his family and conceptions of I and mine. This is me. And what is mine? I have this and I have that. So many things. My book collection. My so many things. So many songs and lectures that I put on my little machine. This and that. Attachments. But they're ultimately not mine. Krishna is giving them to me for my use, but they are his. Because he was only attached to his wife, he was already poverty-stricken. At the time of separation means death, leaving the body, he became very sorry. King Paranjana was anxiously thinking. And remember, while all this is going on, there's incredible bodily and mental pain and disorientation, and the life airs are turned upside down, practically speaking. And pain in the heart, and pain in the head, and pain everywhere. And the mind isn't working. And he began thinking, "Alas, my wife is encumbered by so many children. When I pass from this body, how will she be able to maintain all of these family members? Alas, she'll be greatly harassed by thoughts of family maintenance, because this attachment, husband and wife, is so deep." King Paranjana then began to think of his past dealings with his wife. He recalled that his wife would not take her dinner until he had finished his, that she would not take a bath until he had finished his, and that she was always very much attached to him, so much so that if he would sometimes become angry and chastise her, she would simply remain silent and tolerate his misbehavior. King Paranjana continued thinking how, when he was in a state of bewilderment, his wife would give him good counsel, and how she would become aggrieved when he was away from home. When will he come back, my Paranjana, my Prabhu? Although she was the mother of so many sons and heroes, the king still feared that she would not be able to maintain the responsibility of household affairs. King Paranjana continued worrying, "Alas, after I pass from this world, how will my sons and daughters, who are now fully dependent on me, live and continue their lives? Their position will be similar to that of passengers aboard a ship wrecked in the midst of an ocean." What happens if there are passengers on a ship and the ship goes down, it falls apart in the middle of the ocean? What happens? They all drown. Even if they are good, competent swimmers, they die. So this is what he's thinking. And he is dying. Although King Paranjana should not have lamented over the fate of his wife and children, he nonetheless did so due to his miserly intelligence. Miserly means not using what you have. A miser has money, but he does not spend it. Miserly intelligence means that one is gifted with seeing things in the proper perspective, but he loses his perspective. He loses it. He did this due to his miserly intelligence. It's foolish to be a miser. So life is the time for practice. Of what's the opposite of miserliness? What is the Sanskrit word for miserliness? And what is the opposite? Or odarya, yes? Generosity of heart. A miser never thinks that he has enough. No matter what he has, it's never enough. A person who is magnanimous or has a open-hearted spirit, whatever he has, he's willing to distribute. That is the spirit of the Krishna consciousness movement that Prabhupada wanted. And he even said, if the depth of your realization in Krishna consciousness is, these people who are chanting Hare Krishna, they're nice. This chanting Hare Krishna is nice, I like it. If that is all you honestly realize, if you speak that, it will have potency. And with that spirit, maintain the Krishna consciousness movement. And he said, as I've said many times, without preaching, the institution becomes rubbish. What a harsh word. Rubbish. Rubbish. Useless. Ha! But I'm just such a little devotee. How can I preach? I don't know very much. But whatever we actually positively realize, if we can just give that to someone else, tell someone else. And if Krishna is kind, if you desire to tell that to someone else, to preach in that way, Krishna will send you people to preach to. You can call it preaching. Sometimes I don't think of preaching as preaching. Preaching is the natural, what preaching is when a devotee opens his heart. That's all it is. It's not just a saying of verses or whatever, which that is can be a part of preaching, but it is the kindness, the open-heartedness on the part of a Vaishnava, the generosity of spirit. And whatever jewels or realizations or little bits of internal energy he has accumulated in his due to mercy and due to his serving, He opens his heart and distributes that, not caring who he's giving it to. And the best example of that is Nityananda Prabhu. Or maybe not the best, but such a great, 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 incredibly great example is Nityananda Prabhu. When Madai threw the earthen pot and cut him, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Mahaprabhu gave Jagai mercy, Madai fell at Mahaprabhu's feet and said, "You've given him mercy. You are so kind. But I assure you that every horrible thing that he did that made him so bad that you were kind to him, I also did. I'm equally as fallen as him. You please give me your mercy." And Mahaprabhu said, "No. You have cut him." And he was bleeding. And Madai turned to him and said, "There are so many demons in the past that have cut your transcendental body. They shot arrows at you. They insulted you, but you did not withhold your mercy from them. Why are you withholding your mercy from me? At least tell me how I can be cured. You are the great physician. Tell me how I can be cured if you don't do, if you don't, I have no hope." And Mahaprabhu sent him to Nityananda. "You have offended, hurt Nityananda. If he gives you mercy, then I will give you mercy." So he went and took shelter. Madai went and took shelter of Nityananda Prabhu. And Nityananda Prabhu, what did he say? And this is the example, the Odarya example, and why we say all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, because Guru represents Nityananda Prabhu. So his mood was, and what he said, was that if I have earned any benefit, any piety, any mercy has come to me due to my service to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I now give all that to Madhai. This is the spirit. Very, very, very difficult to have such a open heart like that. Very difficult. It's for Nityananda Prabhu and the great devotees. But this is the spirit that Prabhupada planted by his own example within his society. And without that spirit, without that preaching spirit, without that generosity of spirit, the whole institution becomes
rubbish.
You know, I mentioned yesterday also that I had heard this lecture by a Christian priest. And I told you one of the things he said, and I'll tell you one other thing he said, and it was so interesting. He said that he used to have a group. He started preaching in some place when he was young, and they ended up having 120 young people living in their institution. And he said, until everyone got married, it was all very simple. But as soon as people got married, it became complicated. That's the first thing he said. But aside from that, he said, then came a time when everyone's relationships became terrible. And this one was fighting with this one, and this was fighting with this one, and this one was fighting with this one. And then everyone just got together and said, we have to get our relationships together. So they just concentrated on their relationships for months and months and months. And the more they concentrated on getting good relationships, the worse their relationships got. So they just changed. And then they decided to just go and preach. And then all their relationships got better. Because soon as we become so self-centered, everything becomes ruined. Because no one can satisfy me. No one's going to give me what I need. But as soon as we give, Then by Krishna's mercy, we feel satisfied, so we don't need so much. And then the relationships naturally become satisfying, less troublesome. Without preaching, the institution becomes rubbish. Anyway, I thought that was interesting. We're not the only ones who have these problems. Everyone has them. So he's just on the verge of death. He's dead. And Krishna willing, on Monday... Yes, we want mercy for ourselves. No, when we judge others, we judge them. So we are using judgment. But when we are thinking about ourselves, do we want to be judged by Krishna? Or do we want him to be mercifully disposed to us? Do we want judgment or we want mercy? Well, what do you want? I've made my decision. If there's judgment, it's going to be terrible. We should be very generous in our judgment of others, devotees. That was the point. We should be very merciful in our consideration of this person's like this and this person's like that. We have to be practical, of course. But we should be very generous in our judgment and condemnation of others. Because we wish to be, at least I wish to be, mercifully. I need it. Vanam gato yad harimashreta. The forest has been said to be Vrindavan forest. So even if we're not preachers, sannyas is meant for preaching. So you mean for vanaprastha or for sannyas? So that is considering one will live to 100. So you proportionately shift that. But one can go to Vrindavan and just take shelter of hearing and chanting. That's the alternative that's mentioned in the Bhagavatam by Prabhupada. We read that. That was Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's suggestion. Does that answer what you were? Did you want to say something else? It seems like there's some... But this is a general principle. I saw from Prabhupada's dealings, and it took me many, many years to learn this, that in the Bhagavatam and in class, we speak the ideal. But then when dealing with individuals, you have to give them a prescription, a personal prescription that is appropriate for them. So there is the theoretical ideal and then there's the practical. But unless we discuss the ideal, then we don't have a scale in which to judge what a person can do. If we don't know what the ultimate is, we want to move as close to practical to the ultimate best thing. So the class is meant for the ideal. And then you have to find someone who you trust, who is a doctor, who can prescribe, take your pulse, who knows you, and can give you the right medicine that's appropriate for you and your capacity. Because what's the use of jumping so close to the ideal and then, what is the use of doing that? And we can get an idea of what we think is best, but one shouldn't prescribe for oneself ultimately. So it's very fortunate if we have trusted persons who we can get some shelter and trusted advice from. Very fortunate. Because otherwise we are stuck with our mind. Only. Any other questions or comments? Yes. Yes, and the solution to that won't be to so much take care of the devotees that we neglect the preaching. So there has to be a balance, a practical balance, born, we hope, out of the fact that the devotees are much more mature now than they were. Because it's hard for us to even, in the early days of the movement, to just give you an example, when I was 21 when I joined, and I was one of the oldest devotees. And as our Ravindra Sarup Prabhu was fond of saying, that Prabhupada was the only adult in the movement. And therefore, when you give so much absolute knowledge in the hands of so many sincere yet immature people, there's bound to be some catastrophes, as we know that. But now, for the first time, there are adults, and the people who've been through life, even as devotees, been through life. So I find that the practical element of the instructions, the practical advice that the devotees give the younger devotees now, is so much more balanced. But if it becomes so balanced and no risk, you know, no doing anything for Krishna, you know, just everyone should just go slowly, only act, you know, like that, then the movement will lose life also, because we have to depend on Krishna. So I find that the most difficult thing to achieve in life is balance. So then we were not balanced that way, and right now if we become completely unbalanced that way, then there will be a counter movement to move it that way. So you can't really hit it right in the middle, the exact point, because balance, like riding a bicycle, you know, sometimes if you're turning a corner, your balance is like this, and sometimes when you're turning the other way, balance is like that. Finally, but usually you have to fall down sometimes. So individually, as we get older, and what's the key to balance is being centered, knowing what the center is. So the center isn't the result. That's what we thought previously. The center was the result. But the center is something much more internal, and Krishna conscious is remembering who you're trying to please and remaining Krishna conscious. That's more the center. So that's the part that you can't get while you're young, is the center. So until you're centered, you can't be balanced. It's somewhat becoming abstract here. But yeah. Krishna.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna. We have to practice. Very difficult. But we've seen also now, there's been so many devotees who've left their bodies in glorious ways, and that's probably a good way to end this class, is talk about some of the great examples. The first one that I remember from Vrindavan like that was Mother Gauri, who was a Sankirtan devotee. And she was trying so, she couldn't accept, and this is one of the hard things, you can't accept it's actually happening and you're going to die. And 3 days before, she still couldn't accept it. But then something shifted in her. And then she accepted it, and she was such a powerful, strong devotee that it was, you can't say it was effortless, but she was in no anxiety, she was really peaceful and left in a wonderful way in Vrindavan. And then there was Mother Kirtida in Dallas, who left in, and these are all people who left devotees chanting. And that's when you really need the help of devotees. This is something that we don't want to have to do by our own power. And then there was Mother Archer, who left very, very long. She had lymph cancer, which is an extremely painful type of cancer. And she was almost taking no medication at all right to then. One little morphine pill a day, which is so incredible. And she left in a very wonderful way. Huh?
Sridhar Maharaj is
Sridhar, fearless. How did he? Impossible. He was laughing practically. I mean,
joking.
Incredible. And Mula, you were there for that. How is her consciousness? And the last sense that goes is the hearing. This you can still hear. It's the last sense. She said it was Sangeeta, who was an expert in hospice care, said it was like a miracle because she wasn't breathing, but she was still alive. She spent three or four days.
And
it reminded me of Gokovinda Maharaj. That was incredible. That after he left, and it was almost the way that it happened, he it's like he died of ecstasy or something like that. His body couldn't take it, but he looked so beautiful when he had left. It was one of the most incredible things that I had ever seen, actually. He looked so beautiful. You know, he was always Gokovinda Maharaj, but his beauty like increased like by 10 times. I can't even describe it. It was so incredible. There's so much mercy available. Yes. And did you ever see that book that Bhakti Bala, the Puri Maharaj wrote, Ratna? That's so simple for the simple, it's called. That is something really special. It's a real faith giver. Did you ever see that book? It's called Simple for the Simple, about one, the Balabhadra's wife. When she died, she had cancer. And what happened to her, and how... And then I asked him about it. He told me so many stories, things that happened. She was basically, it sounded like she was in Krishna Lila already for months before. It was confidentially she was saying what her service was and things like that. And something very, this does happen. And then let me just tell you another story that's in a different mood. And this is one that I feel very, very bad about personally. That years ago, when I had some responsibility here, I was at GBC, and there was one old devotee who came and he started leading kirtan. And Guru Puja for Prabhupada, old disciple of Prabhupada, and he wasn't the sannyasi, but he was wearing like a sannyas robes, and he was chanting something that he shouldn't have been chanting, Radhe Radhe Shyamalade, something like that. So I stopped him. You know, strongly, I was in authority, doing the right thing and things like that. And I forgot completely about it after that. And then he came to Vrindavan and he had a disease and he died. Maybe 4 years after that. And then, I think he died in Prithu's ashram. And then Prithu's wife sent me a letter that he had written before he died to me, but he never sent it. And he explained that you know that time when I was there and I was leading kirtan and you so harshly stopped me. And like that, and how much it really hurt him, and things like that, and then he said, but I won't even send this because you'll probably just get angry at me and yell at me or something like that. And I'm mentioning this because not because I'm proud of it, and I'm not proud of it, and it was very, very painful when I read that. But we should be very careful in our dealings with devotees. We should be very careful because you don't know what, you do something and for you it's nothing. You know, you just do something and it's a little heavy, a little hard, but you forget about it. But then that devotee carries it for years and years. And then he dies and then there's nothing you can do. And then you have to carry that mistake that you made for the rest of your life. You have to carry that karma. So we should be very, very careful and more gentle in our dealings like that. Otherwise, we end up lamenting so much. And we end up, we take each other so much for granted. I see this, oh, this one's like this, and oh, he's like this, and she's like that, blah, 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 blah. And then they die. And then you remember, oh, not only were they like that, but they also did so much service for so many years, and you feel terrible that, you know, your mentality was so judgmental. So I said, be a little careful.
How would you have done it differently?
First of all, wouldn't have talked to him then. Wait till way after, not when he's in the enthusiasm of the moment, because he was already doing it, and not in the temple, and gone humbly, and said, you know, you probably had good reason, but you know, the standards, and I don't mean to give you any trouble or anything like that, and there was another GBC with me when we did it, and he was also strong, and I would have done it alone and with a straw between my teeth and what else would I have done? I would have apologized 1,000 times first. It's hard because authority within a spiritual society is ultimately the authority of Krishna, and it's a very heavy stick actually. And sometimes we're not careful when we wield it. So, spiritual authority has to be wielded very, very, very gently, because you don't know how heavy it is while you're wielding it. It has to be dealt with very, very carefully. Because really, psychologically, it represents Krishna. Krishna is doing this, and people, it's very heavy. You have to be gentle with it. And that, if anything, I think that's what the difference between maturity and immaturity in the society. Maturity means the gentle wielding of spiritual authority. And when that's not there, oh, very, very dangerous. And then, but you have to pay if you don't wield it properly. You have to pay. So we don't want to pay, and we don't want to make others pay. So, yeah. And I had an experience with Gaur Govinda Maharaj just on that very day in the evening. We were in a GBC meeting, and it was for sannyasis, for who was going to take sannyas. And there was one elderly man, disciple of Prabhupada. He was 70 years old, and he wanted to take sannyas. His wife just died. But he wasn't really in ISKCON. So the devotees were talking, oh, let's put him on a 5-year waiting list so he can prove himself. And I said, what is this? He's 70 years old. You're going to put him on a 5-year waiting list or something like that? It's ridiculous. We have to encourage him. And Gaur Govinda Maharaj. And then after the meeting, I don't remember what happened, but then after the meeting I was with Gaur Govinda Maharaj and I said, we have to encourage him. And he said, yes, it is our duty to encourage the Vaishnavas. And that was the last exchange we had. But when he said it, it was very, very powerful. It really stuck with me. This is our duty. We have to encourage the devotees. Especially those in positions of authority. That's one of the main responsibilities, to encourage the devotees. Okay, so late. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.